Yes. 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 We're here. We made it. It's the end. It's the end of the year. 2025 being the year in question. And we are alive. If you're listening to this, you're alive. Shout out to the ghosts that are tuning in, however. Don't want to make you guys feel left out. And we are doing, you know what we're doing. Well, you maybe don't know. We're doing our end of year roundup, the PH 5x5. The top 25 records of 2025. So the 25 of 25. It's kind of like the PH 25. Huh? Yeah, PH 25? Right? Because the show is called PH 5. It's 2025. And we're doing the top 25. So you could go ahead and say PH25. We're calling the show PH25 today. Okay. So yeah, it's finally time to do this. Every single other music publication that exists out there has already gone ahead and released all of their year-end lists. So, you know, now that everyone else has released theirs, I have a great idea of, what records I can and can't include on my lists, because my tastes are entirely formed by other people's opinions of things. So, now that I've kind of been able to, you know, conglomerate together all of the different lists from this year, I can finally go ahead and release mine. It is kind of silly to be doing this now. It's silly to do everything I do here because there's only like 5 or 6 people who are listening, but this is for you guys. Shout out to you. As I've mentioned on the show a few times, kind of a weird year for music for me. There was a stretch of a few months in the middle of this whole thing where I wasn't really sure if I even liked music. That's not entirely true, but I just I kind of lost my passion for discovering new music a little bit. Mix of just not great stuff coming out and me just hating my life a little bit. It was a solid year, and I really like having this opportunity at this time of year to go back and re-listen to everything again, because typically every month I'm spending as much time as possible listening to as many new releases as possible, so that I'm ready to go for the show. That doesn't give me a lot of opportunity to really go back on stuff from earlier in the year and kind of revisit, see how my thoughts have changed or possibly stayed the same on these things. It's also a fun time this time of year to go back and listen to music from other years, because again, I'm so focused on digesting all the latest new music that I don't have a lot of time to listen to like older stuff that I like. So it's been fun kind of going back and listening to some old faves that I forgot. I did this really ambitious task the other day of kind of combing through, and this is actually the value of cataloging this stuff the way that I do it. Going back and combing through all of my old year-end lists and kind of adding all of those albums, like, you know, quote-unquote adding them to my title library. So now I have a pretty conclusive list of, like, all the albums I've ever liked, which is pretty crazy. But again, like, that is the value of what's going on here, because it allows me to keep track of the things that I enjoy so that I can later go back and, you know, 10 years from now be like, what was I even listening to in 2025? Oh, right, I had that stupid podcast where I talk about it all in way too much depth. So I've been doing a lot of that. And I'm feeling good about this this list for you guys for this year, this crazy old year that they love to call 2025. All right. So I'm not going to spend too much time on each record because, again, I'm trying to get through 25 here. Whoa! And a lot of these I've already talked about. As always, interesting to see, like, okay, where were these albums in my head back then? Where are they in my head now? You know, there are a few, I think, number one records from the year that aren't even on this list. There are a few records that I didn't talk about at all from earlier this year that are on this list. So, yeah, the monthly top fives are in no way indicative of how this final year-end list is going to shake out, which, again, is just a part of the fun of this whole kind of thing, you know, seeing all this kind of stuff. Anywho, I'm just going to go ahead and get started now. So thanks, as always, for listening. This concludes yet another season of PH5. Season 5! What? 5 years of doing the show, which is completely insane. But it's been a blast, and it's been very rewarding. Thank you to everyone who listens. If you don't listen, that's okay, too. I mean, you're not going to hear me saying that, so it doesn't matter. So actually, you know what? If you don't listen, fuck you! Okay, so the PH5x5, PH25, the top 25 of 2025. Let's get into it. Okay, so number 25, we have God Save the Gun by Military Gun. I don't know, I really kind of went back and forth if I even wanted to include this record, but it's like kind of low-key disappointing as it was in comparison to their previous record, which was my number one album of the year. I can't deny the fact that I listened to a bunch of songs in this record a ton. Lots and lots of times. Most of the record is just okay. You know, one or two songs even kind of suck a little bit, which is a first for Military Gun. But there are like four or five songs on here which are really damn good. And I just have to include the album on here because of that. Because it would be a misrepresentation of my listening habits in the year to not do so. I mean, you know, this list isn't all about listening habits. This is a lot of things come into factor when it comes to the stuff. Yeah, that's my explanation for why this album's on here. Do I think it's a great record? Not really. But there are a number of songs on here which are great. And because of that, it's just gonna sneak its way into the list. So congrats, guys, well done. But I'm expecting a better record next time around. So number 25 is God Save the Gun by Military Gun, and God Save the Band for help them make a better record next time, I guess. Number 24 is the record Submersus by the band Hell. Not the place Hell, although I would imagine if Hell as a place were to release a record, potentially would sound something like this. Potentially. I don't know. I don't really know what Hell sounds like. But you can see it kind of sounding in a way similar to this. Hell is a one-man band project, making a kind of combo between like death, black metal, and doom metal. Kind of like some drone-y metal in there too. So this guy just kind of combines all my favorite types of metal into one deliciously dark, murky-ass soup of a record. This was a record that I didn't talk about this year, but I found it a little bit later on in the year, went back to it, and yeah, fell in love with it. Yeah, was it one of the best metal records of the year? Well, one of the best, yes. Was it the best? No. More on that later, though. But yeah, this is a cool record that, it sounds like a band called Hell made it, so, you know. That should summarize what you're getting into when it comes to this one. So, Submersers by Hell is your number 24 pick for 2025. And sip the coffee. Number 23 is Bambi by Anxious. This was kind of a record that I really, really loved early in the year. And by record, I mean songs, because this is definitely, I guess, kind of similar to Military Gun, but like the first four songs in this record are like incredible, and the rest of the songs are not good. But those first four songs, maybe even five songs, let me think. One, two, three. I'll say four and a half. So good. And this record actually has Counting Sheep on it, which is arguably my favorite song of the year. Certainly up there. Definitely my most listened to song of the year. And a bunch of other great songs. And then, like, at the halfway point, it just, like, the quality drops off a cliff. But this is another one of those bands that they really leveled up on this record. Took their sound, took their music, and their whole thing to the next level. And I'm going to go ahead and call them the Jimmy Eat World of 2025. They've got to release a few classic records before they can officially claim that title. But this is an indication that they're well on their way. So, and please go listen to Counting Sheep. Such a good song. Number 23 for 2025 is Bambi by Anxious. Number 22 is Mercy by Armand Hammer. This is a record that I talked about, I think, in the last podcast, so I don't need to go into too much detail here, because I kind of already just did all that shit. But yet again, the boys in Armand Hammer, sorry, the men, they're old, as I mentioned, when I saw Billy Woods live a few weeks ago. And yeah, man was up there in age, I gotta say. He's like 47 or something like that. Didn't realize that. So the men in Armand Hammer just deliver yet again. A great collaboration with Alchemist. Doesn't quite reach the highs of Billy's record, which we'll get to a little bit later, but this remains one of the most compelling duos in rap, if not the most compelling duos in rap, and it has the best rapper on the planet in it, so hard to go wrong there. So, coming at number 22 is Mercy by Armand Hammer. Number 21 is a record I don't think I touched on, because it came out during my kind of, you know, music blackout period in late spring, early summer. But that is Essex Honey by Blood Orange. I've never really been a fan of the whole Blood Orange thing, to be honest with you. More like respect and appreciation rather than actual enjoyment. But I really, really like this record. It's absolutely gorgeous. And it has this kind of minimalism to it that, where it feels like everything you hear is kind of like coming out of the darkness. And like, kind of like how you turn a light on in a room and the way it kind of illuminates things and then flickers back out in the darkness again. It's just beautiful. It's gorgeous. All the guests across this record don't kind of take away from what the record's doing. Really adds to the whole thing that's going on here. I would go ahead and say probably pretty easily my favorite Blood Orange record. I know that's not necessarily a popular opinion, but that's my opinion. Yeah, just a beautiful, stunning record. I don't even know really what to call this music anymore at this point. It's not really quite R&B, almost like ambient pop. Like, I don't really know what this is, but it's beautiful, it's stunning, and it officially made me a fan. I wanted to go. I know Blood Orange, I think, was opening for Lorde on that tour. That would have been a cool show, but I don't have $6,000, unfortunately. Well, I do. I mean, no, I don't. I mean, I do, but, you know. I do. But that, you know what I'm trying to say. Not to just throw around on, like, tickets like that. Anyway. This is awkward. Let's move on. So, number 21 for 2025 is Essex Honey by Blood Orange. Alright, number 20, we have The Dreaming Prince in Ecstasy. Wow. By Lamp of Murmur. Wow. Another record that I literally just talked about last episode, so I'm not going to go too deep. But this is a record that I actually had a lot higher in my list initially. But then just kind of going back and, you know, doing some review of everything through the year, I was like, I don't know if it's quite like that high, you know? Still a great record. I would say like the most fun heavy music release of the year. But yeah, not like the best metal record of the year for sure. But you know, like Lamp of Murmur just keeps adding more and more elements into their sound. I remember listening to them like 6 years ago or so when it was just kind of very strictly a like lo-fi black metal project. That's like, there's so many layers to the shit at this point now. So many different genres and nuances to the sound that this guy's added. It's been a fun journey, and it's like, if black metal was fun, this is what it would be. Well, it's not what it would be, it's what it is. Like, this is fun black metal. So that's what this record is. So that's number 20, Lamp of Murmur, The Dreaming Prince in Ecstasy. Lucky Prince, I guess. Number 19, we have Waiting Room by Catherine Moore. Yeah, never heard of this particular lady before, but huge fan of this record. It's definitely like a, I guess you could say, like a singer-songwriter record at its like base, at its core. But she brings in so many different genres and different kind of ways of approaching the singer-songwriter kind of landscape that keeps every kind of song on here really interesting, every moment interesting. You never really know kind of what she's going to tackle next, which is really cool. The record has this kind of like dark, almost kind of spooky edge to it as well, which is, you know, obviously my thing. And yeah, I mean, this is kind of a, I don't know if she's newer, but she's newer to me. So a newer artist in my repertoire that I'm very excited and intrigued about, and kind of a first taste of what she has to offer. I really, really like this record. And yeah, just some great songs done in interesting ways is how I would describe it. So number 19, we have Waiting Room by Catherine Moore. Coffee sip. Number 18, we have Confusion Gate by Yellow Eyes. Again, another record that just came out recently. But after a lot of thought, yeah, this is for sure my favorite black metal record of the year. Yellow Eyes continues to just have such a, like, compelling approach to black metal. You know, it's hard to pin down exactly what it is about it, but they do, how described as, like, they approach like occult and mysticism in a unique way for black metal. I know black metal is a genre that's all about, you know, like, oh, like, you know, like spooky kind of shit like that. What Yellow Eyes is doing, I don't need necessarily know if it's like spooky. It's just kind of like, it almost reminds me of like, I don't know, like medieval fairy tales, like I don't know, like fantasy, but in a like kind of strange way. I don't know, fuck, I don't know how to describe this shit. You just need to listen to it. Just really cool, interesting black metal that brings in just a lot of interesting sounds and riffs and puts you in a really interesting place musically. Like, the Lamp of Murmur record is like, yeah, like proggy, rocky black metal that like wants to kick ass and have fun. This isn't about having fun. This is about like almost like getting lost in a mountain, you know, and like seeing like strange beings on the horizon. Like, that's what this record feels like to me. What does that mean? I don't know. You gotta listen to it and check it out for yourself. But yeah, great album. Yellow Eyes continues to be one of my favorite black metal bands for the past decade or so, not missing, and this is one of their strongest records yet, so that's exciting. So, coming in at number 18, we have Confusion Gate by Yellow Eyes. Number 17, we have Tranquilizer by OPN, aka 10tricks.never. Yeah, again, yet another one. A lot of November records showing up early in this list, huh? How many times have I said, I just talked about this, another blah, blah, blah. But yeah, just a great return to form for OPN. I was really worried that he'd kind of fallen off after his past few records, just with increasingly diminishing returns. This is the first record of his in at least 5 years, 6 years, whatever it is, that really just sounds like him again. Like that stretch, that impeachable stretch that he had in the, you know, mid early 2010s, like, this is him returning back that form. And it sounds amazing. He sounds great. And it's just such an intriguing record that, you know, plays with this idea of impermanence. I don't know. And it really, it's in the way that, like, I couldn't really tell you too many things that happen on the record. Like, I listen to it and I kind of forget what happened, but not in a bad way, not because it was boring, but just the way that he structured it and the way that he has, you know, kind of put this record together. It, when you're listening to it, it kind of clicks and, like, you're like, yeah, this is sick. But then once it's over, you're like, what even was that? What did I just listen to? It's a cool effect. Not something I've experienced with a lot of records, but, you know, doing something new and unexpected and unexplained is kind of his way. And I'm also stoked to go see Marty Supreme in a few days. So, coming in at number 17, we have Tranquilizer by 10tricks.never. Number 16 is Lucre by Dean Blunt. So this is a funny one in a lot of different ways. This is barely even a record. It's only like 15 minutes long. And it was initially just a YouTube video uploaded back in like February or something like this. Just one long 50-minute video with kind of all these songs just kind of back to back on it. And Elias Ronnefeld is randomly singing in all of these. In typical Dean Blunt fashion, like, no explanation given for this. It was later uploaded to streaming services, which is great, because I'm not trying to, you know, be walking around listening to shit on YouTube all the time. But again, no real explanation for it. No real explanation for why it's billed as just a Dean Blunt project, despite the fact that Elias is singing on every single song. And he's such like a prominent figure. Like, it's not like just some random person he got to sing. Like, it's fucking Elias Ronnefeld. But all the kind of, you know, hijinks that are typical of Dean Blunt aside, this is some of, like, the most kind of affecting and, you know, gorgeous, straightforward music that Dean Blunt has ever put his mind to and created. These are just some like straight up really gorgeous, well-made songs, and very straightforward songs too. It's probably as close to like a, you know, kind of like pop rock record that either of these two people will ever make. Some of the best songs of either of these two artists' career. And they're just so simple. Some of them are really short and barely even there. But it's just, it's an extremely satisfying record. And because it's so short, you can just kind of listen to it over and over and over again, as I have many, many times this year. So, coming in at 16 is Lucre by Dean Blunt and Elias Ronnefeld. I'm going to go ahead and throw your name in there, pal. It deserves to be there. Okay, number 15 is Lucro Suchio by the Mars Volta. Yes, that's right. I'm including yet another late stage, late career Mars Volta record on this list. Well, not like this list, like a list. So Mars Volta returned from whatever, the ashes, blah blah blah, a few years ago with their self-titled, and it really couldn't sound less like Mars Volta. Like, they literally might as well have just called it a new band, but I mean, it's the two principal songwriters, so why would they change it? You know, got that name recognition, but there's not a ton of connection between, you know, the band's initial run and this new music, and this latest record is a step even further away. This record is what I can only really describe as like psychedelic Latin space lounge jazz, which is really stupid, but that's kind of what it sounds like. And it's fucking awesome. It's a really, really cool record. I think so many people are put off by this current kind of iteration of Mars Volta that they're really missing out on some really great music. I mean, the last few records of the Mars Voltas, well, that's not true, because I actually really like Octahedron, but, like, it's not like, you know, that initial incarnation of Mars Volta's, you know, late era wasn't, you know, not like they were putting out amazing music anyway. So the people who are all caught up in, like, missing that, like, are you really missing that? I know you're only just missing Deloused and the Comatorium and Francis the Mute, and you couldn't give a shit about anything after that. So you know what? Those records still exist. You can go back and listen to them. But take a chance on some new shit, because it's actually weirdly really good. And I saw these guys live, actually, performing this record in full a few weeks ago, and holy shit, was it awesome. I'm betting for sure they're going to release a live version of this record. I'm actually expecting that to be even better than, this kind of quote-unquote studio version. It was sick. But it was just so funny being at the show, and, like, a large portion of people there you could see are just, like, disappointed and being like, oh, play Deloused, play blah blah blah. I was like, no man, that was a long time ago. Like, these guys are completely different people at this point in their lives. This is the music they want to make, and you can really hear that passion for it when you're listening to it. So you know what, it may make me kind of a weirdo or whatever, but I'm all for this new era of Mars Volta. I think it's awesome. And you know what? You just got to give it a chance, and you'll see for yourself. So, coming in at number 15 is Lucro Suchio. There's, like, more to the title, but I'm not doing all that. by the Mars Volta. Number 14, we have Lonely People with Power by Deaf Heaven. It's funny, I called Yellow Eyes, I think, like, my favorite black metal record of the year. Does this count? I don't think so. You know, like, are we really calling Deaf Heaven black metal? I don't think so. At this point, like, not really. I don't know what you would call them, but that just doesn't seem right. But regardless of what you're gonna call them, this is a really, really good record. Not their best record. I still think New Bermuda takes that cake. Not their most popular record. That will always be Sunbather. Maybe not even like their most interesting record, which I still think is Infinite Granite, which is highly, highly underrated. Go listen to that if you haven't recently, because honestly, it's sick. But this might be, in a lot of ways, like, the most complete Deaf Heaven record. It does, in a lot of ways, sound like a culmination of everything they've been doing since they, you know, broke out onto the scene however many years ago. I also saw them live touring this, and that show was absolutely awesome, so I gotta give credit to that. But, you know, after Infinite Granite having almost entirely kind of quote-unquote clean vocals, I think a lot of people were like, oh, you know, they're returning back to the harsh vocals, it's going to be a step backwards, but somehow it feels like a step forward still, in a natural evolution from where they were with Infinite Granite. You know, they're one of those bands that, like, has gotten so much hype over the past little while, and records like this just kind of serve to remind people of why that is. It's because they're really good. And this is a really, really, really good record by a really, really good band. So, coming in at number 14 is Lonely People with Power by Deaf Heaven. Number 13 is going to be No One Was Driving the Car by La Dispute. Definitely the most earnest record I've listened to this year, and for sure one of the most intense records. I would love to see what the lyric sheet for this album looks like. It's probably like the size of a novel. Like, there's got to be like 100,000 words on this. Like, the guy is just constantly either, you know, talking or yelling or screaming. Not much singing, if any at all. There's like some like melodic yelling, I'd say, but that's about as close to singing as it gets. But it's just kind of packed to the brim with these really intense lyrics, really personal lyrics, very evocative lyrics about kind of, you know, personal strife, global strife. It's really all over the place, and it's a record that would have really sat and felt really at home in like mid-90s, but here it is today, and it packs just the same punch as any of those bands, you know, back in the day, you know, Seisha or you know, Page 99. Well, those bands are a lot heavier than these guys are, but Slint, the kind of post-rock, kind of noise rock vibe. They've really kind of captured that spirit and absolutely killed it here on this new record that, as far as I'm concerned, is their best that they've made. Is it a good time? No. In fact, it's quite a bad time. But if you're like me, you love a good bad time. So may I recommend to you number 13 on this list, No One Was Driving the Car by La Dispute. Number 12 is Hexed. And I say it like that because there's an exclamation mark at the end. By Aya. So, this is Aya's second record. And it is a crazy ride. through the mind and experiences of Aya, a trans woman living in the UK, who I believe is now sober, but was once, you know, doing a lot of drugs and doing a lot of crazy shit all the time. And this is kind of a record detailing her exploits and you know, what it's like to be, you know, addicted to drugs and living that kind of crazy, over-the-top party lifestyle. Specifically the dark sides to a lot of it. This is another quite intense record that I wouldn't exactly describe as a good time. It can be quite harrowing at times. She full-on dips into screamo screaming on the last song of the record, which is a very, very cathartic release after all the tension that the rest of the record builds up. But namely, this paints Aya as one of the most intriguing and effective producers of our era. And the fact that, you know, she's able to kind of, you know, on top of these crazy soundscapes that she crafts, bring this really evocative lyricism on top of it as well, just makes it a very complete, deranged, yet very rewarding experience. So, number 12 is Hexed by Aya. 11, we have The BPM by Sudan Archives. This is kind of a very dancey, thus, you know, the title, The BPM. Like dancey R&B record by someone who is looking to just kind of deal with the stresses and trauma of life on the dance floor. You know, this is a record kind of dedicated to dance music and dedicated to the club and dedicated to kind of finding that release and finding salvation through dance and through that feeling of community, of being around other people, and you know, all of the kind of hedonistic pleasures that come with that. It's an extremely well-produced record that just sounds great. I've got tickets to go see her in February. That's going to be sick. But without a doubt, one of my favorite, you know, very quote-unquote here, R&B records, not only of this year, but I'd say of the past few years. Just really, really strong stuff, and she continues to be one of my favorite artists, kind of working in the dance slash R&B, whatever you want to call it, sphere. So, coming in at number 11 is The BPM by Sudan Archives. Number 10. Alright, we're in the top 10 now. Getting into the good shit. The stuff that really matters, you know? I guess? Sure? So, number 10 is Never Enough by Turnstile. I was pretty harsh on this record when it came out. A lot of people were pretty harsh on this record when it came out. And that's because their last record was a stone-cold classic. No one in the world would ever deny that. And this record, in a lot of ways, upon initial listen, experience, whatever it may be, just kind of felt like a retread of Glow On. But I think history and time is going to be very, very kind to this record. Because as the year has gone on, and I've kind of gotten over this initial, like, oh, this is just Glow On, the B-sides, blah, 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 I've realized that that's not true. There's a lot more going on here than just, you know, the songs that didn't make the cut for Glow On. For starters, this is a very, very sad album. While Glow On was kind of about, you know, joy and euphoria and, you know, triumph, this is about melancholy and loneliness and depression and like, Brandon Yates, the frontman, I mean, he's not doing great, you can tell. And I guess that's some people take to fame in some ways, some people take to it in other ways, but you can kind of tell right away from looking at the kind of the soft blue of the album cover, which weirdly match his beautiful blue eyes. It's a sad, sad record. I mean, you may not pick up on that, like, upon initial listening, but when you really, like, sink into it and spend time with it, you realize, like, there's a lot of heavy emotions going on in here. And he's going through it. Yeah, there's a lot of kind of glow-on retread happening here. A lot of songs even sound like kind of carbon copies of those glow-on songs. But as I mentioned when I initially talked about this record when it came out, is that even such a bad thing? Like, oh no, we're gonna make songs that sound similar to one of the best albums of the 2020s so far. Like, it's a pretty winning formula. And there's enough kind of nuance in different things going on here that it really is its own beast. The production has kind of taken even another step forward. It's a very, very lush sounding record. You know, like A.G. Cook is in here remixing a song. There are like flutes and shit. There's like a full-on kind of dance breakdown to one of the songs. And it works. Like, this is a band, remember, started out as like a kind of rap, rocky, hardcore band. And now they're making like some of the most gorgeous, I'm not calling it hardcore, it's not hardcore anymore, gorgeous kind of rock music that there is out there. What a trajectory they've had. And again, it's easy to kind of pick on this record because, you know, Turnstile, easily the most popular, again, quote-unquote hardcore band in the world right now. You know, people find success, we want to kind of tear them apart for it, or at least try to poke holes in what they're doing. But like I said, I think history is going to be very kind to this record, and people will realize, like, this is it as good as Glow On? I don't think I'd go that far, but it's its own thing, and it's fantastic in its own way. It's just not fair to call this a copy of that record, because it's dealing with an entirely different palette of emotions. So, number 10... is Never Enough by Turnstile. Number 9 is going to be The Passionate Ones by Nourished by Time. This is another record that I didn't touch on because it came out when I was too depressed to listen to new music. But this is actually one of the records that I listened to that made me like, oh, like, I can actually enjoy music again. I can get back into it. And that's because it's really good. It's, from start to finish, one of the most consistently brilliant records of the year. Basically, every song is awesome. With the, you know, the guy, I don't know his exact name, sorry. But his very, very unique voice. There's really not a lot of people out there doing what he's doing right now. It's like, is this even good singing? Does it even matter? I don't know. I don't think so. But it's just, it's such a good record of kind of what I'm going to call proto R&B, because it is like, you can tell the guy made this with kind of, you know, just whatever he had at his disposal. It's not a particularly high budget sounding record, but part of its appeal is kind of you know how kind of like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, like, rinky dink it sounds, because that just makes it sound even more genuine. Like, this sounds like music that he really had to make, and, you know, with the topics of like love and really kind of socialist angles on this record and stuff like that, it's really, really well done. This is an artist that I've heard a lot about in the past few years, but haven't bothered to check out. And wow, am I ever glad that I made the effort for this one. Really, really great stuff. So, coming in at number 9 is The Passionate Ones by Nourished by Time. And coming in at number 8, I mean, it really wouldn't be a PH5 episode without some mention of this guy. That's right, it's Billy Woods with his record Gollywog, which I don't know if I'm even allowed to say that word, so I'm just going to say it the one time. And hopefully the world will forgive me. But, I mean, it's Billy. I've talked about Billy Woods on this podcast probably like 10 times now. Because he just keeps putting out records, either his own or with Elucid for Armand Hammer. And they just consistently, time and time again, are incredible. And this is no different. It's kind of one of his darker records of late. Kind of leaning in a little bit more along like horrorcore, I guess you could say. At the very least, different horror stories, whether, you know, made up or fictional, about his life, the life of people around him. But it all comes down to the fact that lyrically, Billy's a poet. Like, this is poetry. And I mean, sometimes, like, the flows are a bit, but, like, you can't even say they're clunky, because his point, I don't think, are the flows. His point are the words that he's saying. And, like, this is the kind of music that you can really sit down and just, like, dissect. Every line, every stanza, everything that's going on here is just filled with meaning, filled with depth. And of course it is. It's Billy Woods. You would expect no less of him. Like I said, I saw him on tour for this record a few weeks ago. Just him and his laptop on stage. Maybe not like the most effective live show I've ever seen, but again, like, just the place was packed and people were somehow like rapping along with him to all these songs, which is crazy because they're all so incredibly dense and it's not like they're filled with hooks or anything, but this is just the power that he has, the power that his music has. And he's without a doubt the MVP in the rap world of the 2020s. I don't see that changing is if he keeps the prolific output and quality up to the way that he has been. The GOAT is still goating. So, number 8 is Gollywog by Billy Woods. Oops, I said I wouldn't say that again. We carry on. Number 7 is Hideous Aftermath by Sangwa Sugarbog. This is a record that when I put my initial draft of this list together a few weeks ago, it was a lot lower. It was kind of hovering around the early 20s mark. But as I kind of, again, went back and went through all these records again and really thought about this list and thought about this year and the music in it, I really think that this is probably the most complete metal record that I heard this year, regardless of metal subgenre. I mean, this is a death metal record, which, you know, is probably my favorite subgenre of metal, so it kind of works out in the favor there, but across the board, it's really astounding what a massive leap forward this album is for these guys. You know, between Homicidal Ecstasy to this one, it's really astounding. Like, in a lot of ways, it almost doesn't even sound like the same band. The way that they seamlessly integrate all of these amazing guest vocalists into the record, the way that they kind of tackle different sounds, although I'm not a huge fan of the industrial song, it just doesn't go anywhere. This is a band that clearly has a lot higher ambitions than I initially took them for, and I gotta say they nailed it. Like, there's a 8-minute long song on here. Can you imagine these guys putting out an 8-minute long song even like 2 or 3 years ago? Yeah, it's just it's amazing. But guys, just get a fucking bassist already, or at least play some bass parts. Like, please, it's I feel like it's an easy thing to do, to just take your music, not even to the next level. Like, you're already on that next level. Like, complete that part of the puzzle by adding some goddamn low end to your sound. But you know, we carry on. For a band without a bassist, it's about as good as it can be. So. Best metal record of the year? I'm gonna put that with an asterisk. Yes. Definitely the best death metal record of the year. Number 7, Hideous Aftermath by Sanguisuga Bog. Number 6 is going to be De Bir Tira Mas Foto by Bad Bunny. And apologies for the brutal pronunciation of that title. So, this record came out, like, right away this year. I think it was literally, like, the first or second week of January. And, again, maybe not a record that I would have immediately gone out and searched for and listened to in any other circumstance. But those first few weeks of the new year, I'm always like, you know, like, oh, like, give me that new shit, you know? Like, what's the 2026 sound gonna be? What's it all about this year? And I'm just, you know, desperate to listen to anything new that comes out in my kind of excitement for that, you know, new music of the year. And so when this record dropped, I was like, okay, great. I have a new album to listen to. I love it. And I was blown away by how much I actually loved this record. I mean, I've always appreciated Bad Bunny. But I've tried listening to his albums in the past, and it just hasn't landed for me. Not, and it's not even his thing. I think it's just me not being as open as I should be to, Latin music. And the joke here is like, you know, this was the year where I get really into Latin music because I really fell in love with this album, and we'll see that's not entirely untrue, but, this is just a, like a monumental record that spans so many different genres of Latin music and kind of the history of music within Bad Bunny's native Puerto Rico. I don't understand a lick of what's being said on this record. I've done some translations, blah blah blah, but that doesn't even matter. What matters here is just the breadth of sound that he manages to cover on this record, while making it all sound very, very poppy and very digestible and very easy and fun to listen to, is just amazing. Like, this is a guy who is probably like one of the top 3 biggest artists on the planet. And the fact that he's putting out music like this that really draws on so much traditional Puerto Rican music, instead of just, you know, churning out more Latin trap or whatever, maybe is it really speaks to his character as an artist, and someone who has a deep passion and love for his homeland in Puerto Rico. It's just an incredible record that has one of my favorite songs of the year on it, Boquete, which I've called emo Latin emo, I guess, so of course I like it. But even aside from that, like, from start to finish, it's just such a good time. It doesn't matter if you don't understand the words, it doesn't matter if you don't traditionally listen to this kind of music, this is just so well done. It's really a high watermark for Latin pop, if you even want to call it that at this point. He's amazing, and it sucks that he probably will never play any shows in the US or Canada again, because I would love to see this live. So, coming in at number 6, we have De Bir Tira Mas Foto. De Bir, I'm going to try to pronounce it properly. Debitura ma foto, okay? By Bad Bunny. How's that? That was okay. Number five, continuing with the trend of Phil's year of Latin music, is going to be Lux by Rosalia. Wow, again, another November record, but what an achievement this album is. Like, holy shit. Like, it is... It's just transcendental. It's absolutely incredible what she manages to achieve on this record. The level of ambition on here is just completely insane. The way that she can take classical music, even like opera, and kind of reconfigure it, and you know, put it out through this lens of pop music is insane. It's an insane task that puts Rosalia into the level of some of the all-time great artists, in my opinion, because the way that she can take this largely orchestral-led record and make it sound like a modern pop album, despite little to no compromise whatsoever across it, is just, it's just incredible. Again, I talked about this one a lot in November. If you want to hear more of my thoughts on it, you can go back and listen to that episode. But this is a just absolutely astounding achievement, in terms of modern pop music, and just really cements Rosalia as, like, top of her class, without a doubt. Yeah. So, number five for 2025 is going to be Lux by Rosalia. Number four is going to be the record Faith by Purelink. Without a doubt, the lowest key record on here. This is more or less an ambient record. And it's funny, like, going back to a lot of my year-end lists that I've done for this show, it's kind of like a pattern in a lot of the kind of top five or top ten. There's always like that ambient record that sneaks its way into my top. And it's because, as I've mentioned many times on this show, ambient music, it serves a very functional purpose for me. You know, most music is just, I'm going to listen to it and I'm just going to enjoy it for the music that it is. Ambient music for me, in a lot of senses, acts as a, you know, like a balm, or like a salve for my mental and emotional wounds, is what I'll say. And in a year where I was, you know, pretty deeply unhappy at a lot of points, this is a very important record for me. It's one that kept me calm and kept me, you know, like, soothed, kept me feeling like, okay, like, this is okay. This is gonna kind of slow my heart rate a bit. This is gonna turn my mind down a little bit. And that's really, really important to me. I mean, it really helps too that it's just musically and objectively really beautiful, well done record. Without a doubt, the best ambient record that I heard this year. But the fact that it also served this more functional purpose on top of that is what really elevates it into a higher standing than maybe it would normally. Reminds me of 2017, when I initially developed tinnitus. Narcopop by Gas came out, and I literally don't know if I would have survived that year without that album, because it helped me fall asleep. It gave me kind of the calm serenity that I needed to drift away. Especially when I was, you know, really dealing with the initial onset of tinnitus and how it affected me. This isn't, you know, quite at that level, but it just goes to show that, music like this can be helpful beyond the mere, let's say, entertainment value that, music typically brings. So, coming in at number four for 2025 is the album Faith by Purelink. Number three for the year is Los Thuthanaka by Los Thuthanaka. So I found it really funny. So this was Pitchfork's number one record of the year. And I remember reading a lot of criticisms of Pitchfork's top 50 albums list being like, did they forget that heavy music exists? It was a fair point. There wasn't a single, you know, traditionally heavy music record on their list. Not even the Def Heaven record made the list, which is strange because, you know, they're Def Heaven Glazers. But, yeah, I mean, it's been a, you know, pretty fair criticism of that particular website over the years, is they tend to just kind of forget that heavy music exists in a lot of ways. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because I found this to be kind of a funny criticism in a lot of ways, because this is a heavy record. Like, this is not for the faint of heart whatsoever, and this was their number one record of the year. Sure, like, it draws upon a lot of, you know, kind of traditional Andean music mixed with, you know, modern kind of DJ sensibilities. There's some kind of, like, you know, it's very dancey, of course, very rhythmic based, but this is a full-blown noise assault at times. Like, the third last and second last songs on here are almost like pure noise. Like, the third last song, what's it called? I'm not looking it up. The third last song on here, the like really long 11-12 minute one, is intense. It's an intense song. Like, sure, there's no metal on Pitchfork's list, but like, have you heard this? Like, this is a heavy fucking song. Like, I couldn't, like, I remember being in Newfoundland and playing the song in the car, well, playing this album in the car. I was like, I had to skip the song because I knew my mom was gonna be like, what is this? This is insane. This is intense. There's songs in here with almost like, if you really, really squint, like, you know, heavy riffs as well. It's a heavy record, but not heavy emotionally. Because it's a record that is honestly filled with so much joy. This is probably the most unique record that I've ever heard. I don't know. I could go that far to say it. I haven't heard anything quite like this ever before. It is just so intentional in what it's doing. And the lack of compromise is just completely insane and so admirable. Like, they refuse to get this record mastered because mastering is a Western civilization concept, which respect. So the whole thing is like clipping most of the time, and they just don't care. It's just pure balls to the wall, just kind of joy and adrenaline in the form of this crazy music that I can't even begin to prescribe a genre to. Literally, if you haven't heard this record, like, you have to hear it. Probably the coolest number one record Pitchfork has ever picked. I certainly considered it as my number one as well, because I keep coming back to it. I keep getting blown away by what's going on here. And it's there's nothing else like it. It's the best way I can put it. There's really nothing else like this record out there. So please just do yourself a favor and go listen to it. So, number three is the self-titled record by Los Thuthanakas. Los Thuthanaka. There's no S. Well, there's an S in Los. Number two. Whew. Number two for 2025 is Private Music by Deftones. You know, that feeling when your all-time favorite band releases their best record in 15 years. Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty comfortable and confident in saying that at this point, that this is their best record since Diamond Eyes. I'm even giving it the edge over Koinoyoken. And it's completely insane that a band that has been around for, at this point, 30 plus years is releasing, like, some of their best music to this date at this point in time. Like, it's insane. It's completely insane that they're still around to begin with. And on top of that, it's completely insane that they still have the juice to this level. Like, this record is amazing. It's so good. I know I'm biased. That's okay. I'm allowed to be biased. But bias aside, like, objectively, this is fucking amazing. Like, it's so good. The songs on here feel like reinvigorated. They feel like essential Deftones. Like, this is a record that I feel like could have been released 20 years ago, and it could have been released, you know, 30 years ago, maybe not. But, like, it's the sound of a band that is so comfortable and confident in who they are. You know, they're going to tweak their sound to keep it interesting, but at their heart, they're still Deftones, and it's instantly recognizable as them, and it's just so good. I don't know, like, it's my favorite band. It's my favorite band coming back after a five-year wait to release, I would say, a top five record for them ever. Best band ever releasing a top five record 30 years into their career. You can't be mad at that. I mean, these guys kind of inspired me to keep the show going. I did that whole episode on Deftones a few months ago after an extended break. You know, this is a record that I listened to that was like, oh yeah, right, I love music. Music's amazing. So, you know, I gotta give a big shout out to these guys. They released this record in a very timely manner, kind of when I needed it the most. And it delivered. It delivered on everything I could have ever hoped it would be. Yeah, I love the Deftones. And I feel so blessed to have this band in my life to consistently deliver, kind of when, you know, I need it the most. So, number two for 2025 is Private Music by Deftones. Number one for 2025 is going to be Choke Enough by OK Lou. Ugh. I remember the glory days of being ignorant, thinking it was OK Lou. Apparently it is just OK Lou. I'm gonna, you know what? And I think when I initially talked about this record, whenever it came out this year, I was like, nah, I'm still gonna call her OK Lou. I don't care. But I have to respect her and her wishes because she's more than earned it. OK Lou. OK Lou. I'll call you OK Lou. I don't even know if Lou is her name. But all this aside, this is my number one record of the year because even with the insane, extraordinary ambition of the Rosalia record, even with the kind of mindfuck of the Lost Through the Naka record, even with my favorite band ever coming back with their best record in 15 years with Deftones, this is the record that intrigued me the most this year, in that I just keep coming back to it and keep trying to figure out why they did the things that they did on this album. I mean, it really helps that it's extremely, extremely listenable and gorgeous and amazingly made, but this is a record to me that, like, feels like it holds some sort of secret, and if I can figure this secret out, I can figure out what the future will hold in store in terms of music. I'm gonna really stupidly call this, apply genre tag to this, and maybe it'll help you kind of understand where my head's at, but this to me sounds like the first example that I've listened to anyway of what I would call post-hyperpop. Hyperpop being, you know, this kind of new in vogue genre pop music that's really kind of built around, you know, like high-pitched vocals and, you know, like kind of crazy, almost abrasive time signatures and production styles. I've never been a big hyper-pop guy. It's all just, it's a bit like too much for me, you know, and it's always kind of felt more style over substance in a lot of ways. Although not Sophie. Shout out to Sophie forever. But this is the first record that feels like it's looking beyond that for the first time. Like, okay, let's take the things that we've learned in hyperpop, kind of this new way of thinking about approaching pop music. Now, what if we went beyond that? This is kind of what the record sounds like to me. This record is filled with so much empty space that it feels like they completed a whole record and then just stripped away like 80% of it, and this is kind of what was left over once they did that. But the lack of kind of things going on sometimes just makes all the little things that they did keep in here so much more interesting and so much more intriguing. Like, so much of this record sounds like you're listening to someone piece together pop songs in a different room entirely. Kind of, you know, strange little horn arpeggios will kind of sound off in the distance. Okay, Lou's kind of vocals kind of seem like, you know, you're missing half the song, and it's like why did they make this way? Like, what? There's just so much intrigue when I listen to this record. Like, how do you decide to make something this minimal and but still have it work so well? Like, I don't know. It's a really hard to explain experience, and it's evocative of so many strange emotions, not necessarily bad ones on this record either. Like, it feels like altogether a pretty happy, if not, you know, kind of occasionally wistful record. But the way that it plays with your idea of what pop music and electronic music is supposed to sound like, and just kind of subverts that on you while not being in your face about it, but being very almost tender about it is just, it's insane. And it really helps too that there is a number of really, really, really great songs on here, but some of these songs, it's almost like you need to put the puzzle together in order to really appreciate them and really understand how good of a song it is. Because, like, she doesn't just hand you these songs. She gives you the pieces of these songs, and it's almost like you have to mentally put the pieces together in order to hear the full song idea that's there. And once you do that, you're like, oh my god, this is amazing. But it's like hard to get to that point. I don't know. This is one of those records that, again, like, I just feel like I don't have the vocabulary to explain properly because it doesn't exist yet. Like, I hear a lot of music that, you know, quote-unquote, sounds like the future. And to me, a lot of that music is just, like, you know, super experimental and kind of unlistenable. But to me, this is a record that sounds like it easily could come out in, like, 2030. But, like, you know, be very, like, popular record in 2030. You know, like, this is what the music charts might sound like in 15, 20 years from now. Like, that's how far ahead of the curve I really think she is on this record. And the whole record, again, she's giving you like kind of the pieces and ideas of these songs without ever fully committing to any of them, except for a few instances. Harvest Sky collaboration with another kind of hyperpop producer, Underscores, being kind of an idea of what a full, you know, complete picture of what the sound could be, with all the pieces. And I think what makes it so effective and makes it all come together is the last song on the record, Blade Bird, which is, again, one of the best songs of the year. Could be the best song of the year. I don't know. It's up there. And it's the most kind of straightforward, easily digestible song on the record. And it really just goes to show you, oh yeah, this woman has the power to write very straightforward, very catchy, very kind of like, you know, easy to understand music if she desires to, but she doesn't. That's too easy for her. Instead, she gives us this kind of baffling statement where, like, again, like, you have to kind of put, like, you have to fill in the blanks in a lot of these songs in your head of what should be there. A truly mind-blowing record that I think will, as time goes on, announce itself as an absolute classic of this year. I'm going to be listening to this album for the rest of my life, and I'm sure I'll never quite be able to fully figure it out, which is crazy to say, because at its heart, it is a pop album. It is catchy pop music that has just been deconstructed to the point where it's almost unrecognizable in that form. But once you see past kind of all of the silence and the kind of, you know, obfuscation that Oklu and her team provides, you know it's there and you know it's real. So my number one record of the year is Choke Enough by Okalu. Woo! That was fun. Overall, 2025, pretty strong year. Maybe not the strongest of the past few years, but there was more than enough really, really good stuff here this year. That, you know, kind of, even when I was kind of feeling out of it and no longer as committed to doing this as I usually am, the great music pulled me back in. So, thanks as always for listening. This concludes another season of PH5. We will take a bit of an extended break, and I will chat with you guys again, I guess, in early February when we round up the January 2026 records. That ASAP Rocky's record's finally coming out, apparently, so that should be interesting. Anyway, that's all. Thank you so much, as always, and happy holidays. Phil, signing off.